If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
This week, can you believe it, marks the 19th anniversary of the disappearance of a woman named Lisa Stebbick from her Plainfield home. For many of you, that will ring a bell. For maybe the younger listeners, it will not. She was 37-year-old mother of two who had just served her husband, Craig, with divorce papers the very day she went missing. And it made national headlines. Craig was a person of interest. But the crime to date has never been solved. It is really probably one of Chicagoland's coldest cases, and nobody has been brought to justice. And this is a case that I believe, knowing what I know about the case, that it is solvable and that someday we will solve it. But to discuss this is Melanie Greenberg, who is very close to the case and a family member and a person who I've spoken with about this case frequently. Melanie, thank you so much for joining us on this almost 19th anniversary.
Thank you so much for having me on and drawing some attention to what has been become a very cold case. It's hard to believe that it is 19 years this week.
It's surreal. Let's first start with how you are related to Lisa Stebbick.
So my husband is Lisa's first cousin. His mother and Lisa's father were brother and sister. I think I kind of became family spokesman because I was a stay-at-home mom at the time. We lived in Naperville, which was the closest to Plainfield, and actually it turned out to kind of be, because I was not a blood relative, I was kind of able to hold it together to be an advocate and speak out and try to get attention to Lisa's case, and to, you know, help get searches going and so forth. So, it's been a long road, and it's hard, because the family has had no closure. It's very painful. Lisa was the middle of three sisters, so she has two sisters that still live in the Chicago area. And you just, those of you who've never had some tragedy affect your family, you cannot imagine the pain of not having a closure. There's no grave for the family to visit. There has never been a funeral for the family to mourn. We all believe in the family that Lisa is dead, but yet we can't have that closure. So, it's a very difficult and painful situation to this day.
And I will say that you have done a really good job of being that advocate and that spokesperson. And it does deserve to constantly be brought up, because as in some of these cold cases that we've covered on this show, the Lane Bryant murders and some other ones that we've touched upon, they can be solved, and they, I believe, will be solved with the advent of DNA technology and the like. Can we just remind our listeners, Melanie, what happened on the day she disappeared? If you could give me a little background into her family and the dynamics and what was going on and the disappearance and the day of.
So I'll just let it be known that to the family, we did not understand, or at least to the wider family. I mean, again, I wasn't her sister. My husband was a first cousin. We had no idea that she was having a very troubled marriage. And Lisa was really going through a hard time. She was trying to separate from her husband, but yet she had very little income. She was working, at the cafeteria in her kid's school. She had seen a lawyer, and the very day that she went missing, she had received papers from her lawyer to have Craig, her husband, evicted from the home. Now, so she and Craig were going through this difficult situation, but yet they were still living in the same house, right? She was, from what I understood later, was sleeping on the couch. And so it was a very difficult, fraught situation. Our knowledge of that day, really, Craig is the only one that really has spoken to what the events were that afternoon. So, do we completely trust his narrative of the timeline? At the time, she had two children, ages 10 and 12. Craig would not allow them to be interviewed by the police at the time of her disappearance. the person who actually reported her missing the morning after the last time that she was seen was her neighbor, Lori, who she had expressed to Lori, if something happens, call the police. So, you know, Lisa knew she was in a difficult relationship. She had already notified a neighbor, a friend, and Lori noticed, hey, the blinds are down in the house. I haven't heard from Lisa, you know. So first it was Lori that reported her missing, and then Craig, you know, spoke to the police and said. So his timeline is that she went off, you know, she left the house, and he sent the kids to get candy at the local Jewel, and somehow she never returned. So it became this national interest of a case because here's an attractive young mother with two children. Why is she suddenly missing? I can tell you that Lisa's someone that would never just abandon her kids, who would never just run off and leave her children. That is absolutely not what happened. So Craig has always been a quote-unquote person of interest in the case. I mean, there was an FBI search of the home after some time of her disappearance, but there never seemed to be, there's never been a body, right? There's never been that evidence. Her cell phone, her credit cards, nothing has been used since that day that she went missing. So we are just left, you know, at loose ends. Plainfield, for those of us in the Chicago area that know, it's on, at that time, 19 years ago, it was on the edge of nowhere, right? So we did searches. You know, this is after there had been the Plainfield tornado. And so all the emergency services and the police department and all these different departments really worked well together in Plainfield. We did coordinated searches. There were divers that dived into local ponds. There, we searched a state park that was nearby to Plainfield, to her home. So nothing has ever been, you know, there was never anybody. And at that time, 19 years ago, I mean, you're a lawyer, maybe you can tell me. At that time, 19 years ago, I don't think in Illinois there had ever been a prosecution of murder for without a body. Now, I recently learned that there was a case in Peoria where there wasn't a body, but yet there was like a pool of blood in a storage locker or something. So someone was prosecuted. But well, and it you're was seeing, a rare thing,
you know? You're seeing more of it now, but why? Because of other circumstantial evidence, and people think that circumstantial evidence does not a murder case make, but it, we all know now it really does. And you don't have to have eyewitnesses. You don't have to have a body necessarily if you have other circumstantial evidence leading to that conclusion beyond a reasonable doubt. Melanie, you told me about a police report that was given to the family after Lisa went missing. Can you tell our listeners what was in that report and if you had known and you and the family had known about some of these instances?
We weren't aware. You know, I mean, Lisa, she was having all these marital problems. And like I said, they were living in the same house yet. You know, I don't know that they were legally separated yet, but she was trying to, she had a lawyer. She was trying to make these things happen. There was one night that she came home late, and he had locked her out of the house. And so there was some sort of altercation and dispute, and the police were called. So, you know, we had no idea that she was in such dire straits, that she didn't go. She was a proud woman that didn't want to go to her family for help. There's all these would have, could have, showed, you know, if we had known, right? If we had only known, if we could have helped, but we... She was proud. She didn't want everyone to know what a difficult situation that she was in. But there's all sorts of, you know, I mean, when you have the kind of relationship that you're seeing your cousins only at, you know, holidays and Mother's Day and things like that, you realize you don't know what everyone is going through in their private lives, right? You just, you can find out things after the fact that, you just had no idea what kind of a life someone else was living and what pain that they were going through and trying to manage all on their own. You know, I mean, all I can tell you is that Craig never participated in a single one of the searches. What does that tell you? Right? Like, It's very difficult. The children were 10 and 12, as I said. Now they would be 29 and 31. We don't have contact with them. They have cut up contact, and that's, you know, there's all sorts of added pain to this situation. Not only is Lisa missing and we don't have closure, but, you know, it's just a very difficult family situation.
Well, and the question is why? I mean, I guess, you know, his answer would probably be why are you keeping the kids away from their extended family? Their mother's family is part of them. It's 50% of their genetic code. So why are you, mm-hmm. you know, and it could be that, you know, that his argument would be, well, at least his family thinks I killed their mother. So why would I have my children around them? But
right.
Let's circle back with that. I do want to hear just a little bit about that police report, and you may not have it in front of you, but there was one particular.
I don't have it in front of me, so I'm hesitant to misremember something, I guess is what I'm saying.
But there, if you can paraphrase, there was one exchange that was really ominous. I mean, you really can't read it any other way, and I know we both had it in front of us at one point, but can you just tell our listeners, just paraphrase what the encounter was between the police and Craig Stebbick?
You know, I mean, he said, you know, I mean, it was also in front of neighbors that he said things like she would be on the back of a milk bottle, right? Like that she would be, you know, like a missing child, you know, like that was the kind of the implication. And I think he said, I don't remember the exact phrase and I don't want to misspeak, you know, but he said, in the heat of the moment when the police were there, he said some very harsh words. And so, you know, I also asked myself, if this disappearance had happened in a town that wasn't essentially Mayberry, right? For those of your younger listeners, they don't know what that means. But, you know, this was Plainfield. It wasn't Chicago. Would a Chicago cop have been more suspicious from the get-go? Would things have happened in a different way in those crucial first days? I don't know. I don't, like I said, you have all of these what if questions. But, you know, Plainfield, they did the best that they could. The FBI was brought in, but again, they're being, and I have spoken, you know, with the various state's attorneys down and Joliet, and there's this, you know, there is no body, right? And so there's only one chance to prosecute a case, and so there's this hesitation and caution. And meanwhile, we're 19 years on, and it's a cold case, and she has not been found. So, you know, does the family have hope? I suppose so, but it's hard when it's 19 years on, and you don't have resolution.
Now, Melanie,
you hear other stories where, for instance, maybe somebody knows something, you know, like the Brown's Chicken case where a witness came forward years later and that case was solved. So you never know. Something could happen. Something could break.
And, you know, in this case, one of the things that you had mentioned in a prior interview that we had was that, DNA is obviously much more advanced than it was 19 years ago, but she lived in that house. So to the extent so it's not like you were searching a place where she, you know, and then all these strangers might have been or whatever. She was there. So her DNA was going to be there. Craig's DNA was going to be there. And that wouldn't really point to any perpetrator or any wrongdoing by anybody.
I mean, if there was a drop, so let's say there was a drop of her blood found on his truck. Okay, what would a defense attorney do with that? You know, that she, you know, because we could say that the family knew she was never allowed in that truck, but a defense attorney would say they're a married couple, they were living together, she, you know, cut her nail on it, you know, whatever. Like, you know, it wasn't the pool of blood in the storage shed like this case in Peoria, right? So, it's just difficult because there isn't a body. And I don't even know where we would begin to search anymore. You know, we searched everywhere that we could think of. And 6 months later, there was a Stacey Peterson case that was really only a couple of miles away.
Okay, and I wanted to ask you about that, because it was this was so odd, because here was Lisa Stubbeck missing in Plainfield, which was a suburb, like you said, that was kind of in the inception of all these homes being built, and Stacey Peterson, the fourth wife of ex-police officer Drew Peterson, went missing in Bolingbrook, which was just 3 miles away. And it seemed like, that case sort of subsumed the case of Lisa Stubbeck. Now, in your view, because you lived through it and you were going through the searches and helping out with spearheading some of these efforts to find her, do you think the Stacey Peterson disappearance, and by the way, she has never been found. And
Peterson that's the point that I wanted to make. The only reason that Drew Peterson was in jail because they exhumed his third wife.
Right.
You know, Stacey Peterson's body was never found.
So do you think
I can tell you that I walked up the first day, you know, one of the first days after Stacey Peterson had gone missing, and I spoke to a family member there, and I said, you should be the family spokesperson. I said, you have CNN and you have everybody out here. You need to have somebody talking and keeping this in the public eye, and it did just become like this. You know, but I will say the Peterson family, Stacey's family, her sisters, they tried to share the spotlight. We had joint press conferences with families of missing men in the area, which get no attention, you know. And so they tried to use the fact that the media was camped outside of Drew Peterson's home to try to draw attention to other cases and to try to share that spotlight and get attention to some of these other missing person cases that also have never been solved. So, you know, I have to, you know, give it to them. People who didn't live through that time cannot imagine how absolutely crazy it was that these two cases were 3 miles apart and were garnering all this crazy national attention. These two young mothers missing with young children. You know, it was just crazy.
So I got two quick questions, and then I'm going to really have to break. We're talking about Lisa Stubbeck, and this week actually marks the 19th anniversary of her disappearance from Plainfield. Two very quick questions. What do you think will have to happen for her body to be found and for someone to be brought to justice? In a nutshell.
I think, you know, maybe somebody knows something that hasn't spoken up, or maybe, you know, our one person of interest might say something. But there's so many people who were witnesses at that time or could have been witnesses. It's been 19 years. Craig's father, for instance, has passed away in that time. You know, we even did searches up near the family cabin up in upper peninsula of Michigan. You know, I think someone could just, you know, in other missing persons cases, a body has just been found by a jogger or something, you know, something like that could happen where her body is found, or somebody could say something. But it is, you know, I don't even know, you know, we've had psychics approaches or whatever, but it's never been anything that could actually be acted on to search. Well, if a psychic calls me and tells me she's in water, okay, well, what water? Like, there's, you know, where are we supposed to look? And I think the police are open to any tips. You know, the Plainfield police, you know, are open and still, you know, still willing to investigate, but it has to be something that's actionable, right? So, I don't know. I mean, we're still holding out hope, but whatever the Plainfield police call it, it's essentially a cold case 19 years on.
And I have just 20 seconds here. Lexi and Zach, like you said, these are Lisa's children who are 29 and 31. They've moved away from the area. We don't know where they are. What would you have to say to them from the family? Literally 20 seconds, Melanie.
I mean, the door is always open. We would love to hear from you. And Lisa's sisters wish that they could talk with you.
so much pain here with all of the uncertainty, and 19 years is a long time to go without answers. Yeah. Melanie Greenberg, thank you so much. I'm going to give out the numbers for this. I believe this is the police department. If you have any ideas or tips, 815-267-7217, and you can also report information to the FBI at 312-421-6700. And if you didn't take those numbers down and you have something to say, you can always email me at wgn@askkarenconti.com. Thank you, Melanie. Take care, and I wish you and your family the best.